The Legal Sunday, the historical aspect of the question, Chapter 6. The character of the Plymouth Brownists, who established the Sunday law in America, further examined. It is important to remember what is often forgotten or deliberately ignored in the discussion of our subject, namely, that the idle and cheerless Sunday is the great distinctive tenet of Brownism, and that it distinguishes Brownism from Catholicism, Lutheranism, and Calvinism as well. The practice of Catholic countries shows that the maintenance of such an institution forms no part of that church's purposes. This practice remains now substantially what it was in Luther's time. His Protestantism included no objection thereto. Calvin formulated no proposition even remotely tending to set up the obligation of an idle, cheerless Sunday among the duties of a Christian life. But what is even more important, and what is even more often forgotten and more deliberately ignored, is this: that, widely as the dogma of the idle and cheerless Sunday separates the Brownist from non-Puritans of every sort, it did in the beginning separate him scarcely less widely from all Puritans who were not Brownists. Brownism was indeed a grotesque English exaggeration of early Scotch Protestantism. In time, it reacted on Scotch thought, but the men who trained with John Knox were not tainted with this Brownist idea. They did not know the idle and cheerless Sunday which the Brownists brought to America. Knox himself wrote letters, traveled, and gave set entertainments on this day. Only by degrees, as Brownism spread and the extraordinary child of Puritanism devoured whatever there was reasonable, sincere, and good in the parent, did the idea of an idle and cheerless Sunday prevail. Only after Brownism had gotten control of the British Parliament was the first step taken to set up the idle and cheerless Sunday as an English institution. And, as Brownism is responsible for the idle and cheerless Sunday of England and Scotland, so it is for the establishment of that institution on American soil. And this establishment was only possible, as its maintenance is only possible, through the union of church and state which was effected under Brownist auspices. The spirit which gives birth to this kind of legislation and seeks its enforcement is the spirit of Brownism and nothing else. The variety and strictness of its requirements are determined by the extent to which Brownism prevails in each community. As, according to the very highest authority, an evil tree cannot bring forth good fruit, it is not to be expected that such a tree as that of Brownism should give birth to anything in the way of legislation which is desirable or worthy of imitation in the interests of humanity. But from Brownist ideas of the union of church and state, and from Brownist methods of legislation, America has, in the main, fortunately shaken herself free. The conspicuous exception which forms the topic of this essay is found in the Sunday laws. While Sunday laws were among the enactments of other than Brownist colonies, they were one and all modeled after the Sunday laws which Brownism fastened upon the English people. While members of many communions have a superstitious reverence for these laws, yet, by whatsoever names they call themselves, all such people are the intellectual children of the Brownists, the heirs of their spirit, the perpetuators of the theory of a united church and state which the Brownists planted in America. A word may be said here in regard to the basis of this conception of an idle and cheerless Sunday, which constitutes an essential dogma of Brownism, and distinguishes it from all other phases of Christianity. The Brownists elevated what they called the observance of this day to the rank of a leading, if not the leading virtue, of a Christian life. And they developed a theory of the proper nature of this observance, which it has been often asserted that they borrowed from the Jews, but which, as will presently appear, and as cannot be too often or too strenuously insisted, was, in its entirety and symmetrical completeness, a conception original with themselves. In fact, whatever its merits, an absolutely new discovery or invention in the world of mind. Religious feasts and fasts, sacred days of one kind or another, are common to all systems of belief. The distinction between a feast day and a fast day is not merely one of dieting. To the masses, the feast day is a day of general rejoicing, of holiday-making and recreation, of whose observance some special religious service forms a part, but by no means the whole. A good illustration is the common English way of observing Christmas, which consists in going to church in the morning and the matinee in the afternoon. On the other hand, the due observance of a fast day involves some self-denial in other than the matter of food, an extra seriousness, and, if retirement into the closet be not practicable, then a confinement of activity to the necessary duties of business. Nobody has ever denied that Sunday has been observed as a feast day and not as a fast day by all who have observed it from the beginning. It is so now on the continent of Europe. It was so in England when the Brownists appeared with their new doctrine. By common consent, work was suspended, and the churches were filled in the morning and often in the evening as well. The intervening time was spent in play and sport. It was not the observance of Sunday then, but the manner of its observance, which it was the Brownists' mission to enforce. It has been said that work was generally suspended by common consent, but play was not. That Sunday play and not Sunday work was the special object of the Brownists' antipathy is sufficiently shown by the history of the controversy. King James's famous proclamation announced to his subjects that they should not be molested in their Sunday sports. Evidently, the question of interfering with work was not broached, because, as a matter of fact, work was voluntarily laid aside. During his reign, a bill was introduced to prohibit not Sunday work, but Sunday play, which the king requested Parliament not to pass, as it was inconsistent with his proclamation. And afterward, when the very first Brownist Sunday law was enacted, it contained no reference to work whatever, but merely forbade the going outside of one's parish on Sunday to engage in bear baiting, bull baiting, interludes, common plays, or other unlawful exercises and pastimes.
But here comes in the originality of the Brownist, for which neither friends nor foes have hitherto given him his due credit. The Brownist never deliberately denied that Sunday was a feast day, but he promulgated the extraordinary and, as has been said, altogether original idea that the proper way to observe such a day was not merely to abstain from work, but to abstain from play as well. The evidence is clear, not only from the early Brownist legislation, but from the laws of our states on this subject, that Sunday play always was and is still at least as objectionable to the Puritan as Sunday work. Nay, the conduct of those to whose activity the occasional prosecution of Sunday law cases in our day is due affords good ground for the assertion that of the two things they would rather give up the prohibition of work than the prohibition of play. Here, then, is the great original and absolutely unique conception of Brownism, a feast day to be observed by refraining from work and labor and from enjoyment as well. Not merely a Sunday of idleness, but a Sunday of idleness and gloom is the ideal of the Brownist. If the conception is unique, the way in which he arrives at it is astounding. It forms, in fact, one of the most extraordinary chapters in the history of ideas.